trusty money remains the bedrock of stability. The soul of money is trust.
I think we are not paying sufficient attention to the law of unintended consequences.
In the immortal words of the Doors, the time to hesitate is through.
Wicked Smart Bitcoin. How are you, man?
Doing pretty good. You can just call me Wicked if you want.
Okay, I can. How are you, Wicked?
I'm doing good, man. How are you doing?
Good, very good. Yeah, I'm getting to record another one of these episodes of Discovering Bitcoin. And, you know, there's a lot of Bitcoin podcasts in the world, but I don't think there's as many as people think. I don't think as many people own Bitcoin or even understand Bitcoin as we think. So the TAM on the podcast scene in relation to Bitcoin is wide open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's true. There's a lot of total addressable market. Lots of plebs left to be introduced to Bitcoin for sure.
I think so. How did you discover Bitcoin?
Yeah, so I think I kind of have like two discovery stories. I have an initial discovery and then really a rediscovery, you know, which is the more recent story, but kind of starting at the beginning, if you want to go back then. I first heard of Bitcoin and interacted with it when I was in college. A buddy of mine introduced me to it through Silk Road, of all things. he and I used it in that way. So it was an interesting introduction. You know, I thought it was very interesting that we could use this magic internet money on the internet to buy stuff that we weren't supposed to. And you know, it's like, I didn't really think too much of it, right? Like I was just young and kind of dumb. So I was just using it as a tool. But yeah, I mean, you know, mistakes were made. Bitcoin was spent that will never be recovered. And the rest is history from that initial, you know, introduction or origin to Bitcoin. And I actually didn't even touch it at that point. You know, my friend did all of the interacting with, you know, random people that he met in coffee shops to get it and, you know, actually spending it on Silk Road. And I was just there watching over his shoulder while he was doing it. But yeah, that was kind of like my first touch point. And it was, you know, again, it was interesting, but I didn't think too deeply of it.
That's really interesting just because I was going to mention, like, you seem to have picked it up almost immediately in terms of the value prop of, you know, getting Bitcoin to purchase things. And, like, oh, let's call a spade, drugs. I mean, drugs are fine in moderation, whatever. Yeah. But my point is that I was going to say, it seems like you picked up the value prop straight away, but you'd actually removed yourself from a lot of that understanding or incentive, I suppose, to learn a little bit more because your end goal was to just get the material rather than the transaction and understanding, what this transaction
for sure.
is doing.
And And the other thing is, you know, I was a poor college student, so it's not like I had any any money to save, right? I wasn't dealing with that problem, so it wasn't really something that was on my radar, right? I wasn't I wasn't thinking about, you know, like what it means for something to be absolutely scarce or what it means for, you know, something to be unconfiscatable, you know, or have zero counterparty risk or any of these things that you kind of learn up later on. But yeah, at that point, I was just fascinated, you know, with it was a monetary system that no one was in control of and that you could use to buy drugs. So I was like, oh, this is interesting. But anyways, you know, that was a pretty brief moment, you know, in time when we were using that. And, you know, I think it got shut down shortly thereafter. And then, you know, I kind of went dark for a couple of years, and then the 2013 bull run happened, and I got a hold of some, you know, actually by selling some drugs. And then I traded that for a little bit, right? I was just trying to flip it to make, you know, some rent money. And so, yeah, you know, my next kind of discovery of Bitcoin was as a trader, right? Like, I think a lot of people get into it for that reason too. And at this point in my life, I was still, you know, very much a poor college student or post, you know, post grad. And I was just doing a little research on the side for some professors and barely making ends meet. And so I, you know, try to trade Bitcoin and crypto in general. And I did that for way too long. And not very successfully, if I'm being honest. I did not learn my lesson for a while, right? So I traded probably until honestly 2021, but like, you know, yeah. But again, not successfully. So
how many times did you have to touch the stove before you were like, okay, I'm just not that great at this trading thing. Like, I'm not Michael
Burry. Yeah, like, well, here's the problem is that I didn't get wrecked completely until the very end, yeah, right? Okay. So like, I was just good enough where I was like, okay, like, oh, this month I made an extra whatever, enough to pay rent for the next 2 months. And, you know, so that's like, keeps you going just enough, right?
Get a taste.
But yeah, then in 2020, I got wrecked. Literally, you know, right before the bull run, I got wrecked twice. So, you know, I pretty much lost everything. Saved up enough to start trading again, lost everything again. And then at that point, this was the rediscovery phase. This was the point where, you know, I had to like sit myself down and really start to think of like, you know, what the fuck am I doing with my life? This is also the point in my life where I, you know, I kind of got my first grown-up job. So,
right,
you know, now I was actually starting to think about savings and, you know, where should I put my wealth? Dabbled in stocks, thought about real estate, all that stuff. But yeah, after getting wrecked, and then after watching the next bull run start, that's when I got really, really interested in Bitcoin because, you know, I realized it was something that was like, it wasn't just this, you know, odd, you know, cryptocurrency that just kept going up. It was like, there's something to this, right? Things don't just go parabolic, you know, three or four times in a row, right? This is like, this doesn't happen. So what's actually happening here? What's going on under the hood? What's the history behind Bitcoin? I just got kind of obsessed with it at that point. So, you know, late 2020 is when I really, really started to dive deep into it. The thing that got me really started at that point again was like the kind of like the documenting of the history. So I actually made a video at that point, just like a, you know, it was actually my first animation I made, just like programmatically in Python, that had the full price history. This is something that I hadn't seen up until this point. So a price history that went from the very first exchange rate on October 5th, 2009. I think it was 1,309 Bitcoin for a dollar. That was the first exchange rate. All the way till, you know, that point when I made the animation. And then along with, you know, the price kind of animating, right, through the history, I had kind of key historic events that would pop up and kind of scroll by. So this was like, it was a pretty, you know, difficult thing to like go through and try to consolidate all, not only the price history, because I had to go to like, you know, weird, you know, sources and make sure that they're all, you know, correct in price and whatnot, but then documenting all the history. I mean, it's like weird, odd things. Yeah, but it was cool. Like, I think it really gave me like a solid foundation of catching up on everything that had happened up until that point. You know, like I said, I had heard of it early on. I had traded it very early on. You know, I was like kind of paying attention, but mostly just the price. And so it was cool, like, you know, filling in all the gaps historically of the things that I should have been paying attention to. but yeah. Anyway, so that's kind of my discovery, I suppose. And then, then I joined Twitter and the rest is history.
We'll have to try and dig out that video, if you can maybe send it to me, and I'll try and put it in the show notes, because it'd be a cool little record to have, at least for listeners, to just sort of dive back in and sort of check that out. I've been looking at your videos for a little while now, and, you know, Twitter's algorithms, the search function is just a ball ache. So if you have it, man, send it to me and I'll chuck it in the show notes. But would you say that doing that, being motivated enough to do that, you obviously had some sort of an aha moment prior to that to sort of wind you up enough to be bothered? Because that sounds like a fairly fiddly task.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. I kind of skipped over, like, you know, I guess how I got Orangefield. So again, you know, the start of the 2020 bull run made me realize there was something going on here. I started reading Bitcoin books. So obviously starting with the Bitcoin Standard, as most people do. That was very interesting. You know, like, I thought that was a cool read. It didn't, you know, like, it didn't have a super, super, you know, impactful, I don't know, like, it wasn't super impactful to me, that one. Like, you know, don't get me wrong, it's a good book, and there's definitely some good key insights, but
you didn't close it and be like, I'm gonna buy all the Bitcoin now.
No, well, I mean, kind of, but not quite. The one that actually got me really good was Knut Svanholm's Sovereignty Through Mathematics. Do you know of Knut?
I do. I've had the good fortune of meeting Mr. Svanholm. He called me a homo.
Yeah.
In a really nice, like, meaningful way.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, I need to meet him at some point. But yeah, so anyways, I read Sovereignty Through Mathematics. I read Independence Reimagined. It was on a trip. I went down to Florida, and I was just sitting on the beach, and I think I read both of these just in one sitting on the beach. You know, they're little tiny, you know, thin books, so they're pretty quick reads. And I'm not a good reader. You know, I've never really been into reading books, if I'm being honest. But I read those in a day, and there was a couple of key points that really stuck out to me. I think you know, like, the main one was this idea of, first of all, absolute mathematical scarcity, something I hadn't really thought of, you know, until I read his books. You know, I knew, like, I'm pretty sure, you know, I'm sure Saifedean mentions it in the Bitcoin Standard. I'm almost positive he does. But, like, I think the framing of it was a little different with Knut. And he framed it in a way where he made it, or he described it as being more of a discovery than an invention, right? So, like, almost like, you know, Satoshi stumbled upon this discovery of absolute scarcity. And and he frames it in a way where, you know, he said that it's like, basically, you know, because it's a discovery, it can only be discovered once, right? Because the discovery itself is you know, the very, you know, the very thing is like the discovery is resistant to replicability itself, right? So it's like once it's been discovered once, you can't rediscover it. And this,
you can't reinvent the wheel.
Right. Well, not only can you not reinvent the wheel, but I mean, we all know like other shit coins claim to be absolutely scarce, right? Some other ones do. But I guess the way that Knut thinks about it and the way that I've started to think about it because of him is that there can really only ever be one digital asset that is absolutely scarce, and everything else is a copy of that thing, right? And so even if you've made a shitcoin and you say it has a hard cap, it's no different than another shitcoin that you can make that you might say has a hard cap, right? And so in that sense, every shitcoin that comes after Bitcoin is just adding to the supply of shitcoins, and you can add to them infinitely, but you can only ever have 21 million Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. So that idea, like that really, really got to me. And I don't know, maybe I was like in the sun too long, but no, I came out of that day, you know, coming home from the beach, and I was like, yeah, this ain't special. I mean, you know, it's like framing it as a discovery rather than an invention. That was dope. I really liked that. I guess a little background. I studied physics in college. So, you know, this idea of things being discovered was something that, like, you know, I kind of had already studied, right? I studied all these great minds that had discovered these various universal truths, and framing Bitcoin as just another discovery of another universal truth being absolute scarcity really resonated with me. So
yeah. That's cool. Then the next question is generally, why do you think you were open and able to discovering Bitcoin? And I dare say having that grounding in physics enabled you to, once you had it framed in the correct way, once it was sort of met at your map of the world, so to speak, it was it resonated. So why do you think you're open and able to discovering Bitcoin?
I think with my background in physics and more broadly, you know, mathematics and programming, it kind of allowed me to see it both as, you know, the discovery that we just kind of talked about, but also as just the fundamental protocol it is, right? Mm-hmm. Seeing it for what it truly is, right? I mean, you can talk about the theory of it and you know what it is that we've discovered, absolute scarcity, and you know, a decentralized network that has zero counterparty risk, but the actual network itself and the protocol was also something that was really interesting to me. And you know, I don't program in C++. I'm not like a shadowy super coder. I'm just a I'm like a novice Python programmer. Like I know just enough to make some cool animations, but not, you know, not much past that. But you know, at the same time, I was able to at least kind of sift through some of those key components of the source code and like kind of, you know, gain some insights as to how the mechanism for the halving and the mechanism for deriving that absolute scarcity actually works. You know, this is something that I wanted to verify myself, right? I mean, you get pushed down the rabbit hole and you start hearing all these all these like various, you know, sayings and memes. And one of them, of course, is don't trust verified. So I thought, well, I might as well try to see if I can at least, you know, understand part of this code and the important part, right? The part that kind of really drew me in, which is the absolute scarcity. So yeah, that was like another aspect of it that I think made me more susceptible to like getting open to it is actually being able to at least understand that part of it, and then having confidence that this thing really is absolutely scarce, right? I mean, it's like Picasso paintings, but you know, but like in money form and digital, so like infinitely better. but yeah, we're not making more than 21 million. So like, that's just that. And eventually, you know, the whole world, I think, is going to realize this, right? I mean, there's a reason why scarce things are valuable. Humans are weird. We like to collect things that are scarce. I don't know why. But it just is something we do. And then you match that with the other properties that Bitcoin has that make it good money, right? And you've got something that just is totally fundamentally different than anything you've ever seen before. You know, it's, yeah, like, I don't know. It's hard to even...
Oh man,
believe that it's true, but
it's hard to wrap your head around it, because you think about it for too long. And I mean, I do my best to keep up with these sorts of conversations if I'm talking to people like yourself. We had Anish Kave on a few weeks ago, and you know, Nifty Nye, and it's like the way that you guys frame that sort of stuff from the more mathematics say background. You know, and there's like a running joke now on the pod where I'm definitely in the liberal arts side of the ledger. You know, that shit just melts my brain, and I'm fascinated by it, and I appreciate trying to understand it, and doing my best to get a real superficial level of understanding. But thinking about this concept of digital scarcity, I mean, they're just such contradictory terms.
Right.
And
exactly.
It's like, what? Like, you get that there's, I don't know, 100, what is it, rookie Michael Jordan basketball cards, or however many, you know, Charizards with that little hologram thing in the first Pokemon issued, you know, cards and things like that. You get that, I guess, because they're sort of physical iterations, but digital. In the digital realm, you know, I could just copy and paste anything I want. I can right click and save. But to not be able to do that because of this strange connection with thermodynamics and how it tied to, maybe you can explain that a little bit better than I can, but it's just, you would have had that understanding with the physics background, I dare say, a lot more than like a dummy like me, where I could just be, I was just looking at other smarter people, just recognizing they were way smarter than me. And if that's what they were down with, I'll dive a little bit deep and kind of try and verify for myself. But, you know, I try and just be the sponge in the room rather than come up with anything original.
I mean, I feel like I was, you know, I definitely am the same way too. I don't know. I feel like I'm just kind of a pleb like everyone else. I'm trying to learn as much as I can. I think the important thing to recognize with Bitcoin, though, when we're talking about its absolute scarcity, or, you know, the inability to replicate it, what made it special, right, was that it achieved that while staying decentralized. So it had no central coordinator that was saying, you know, yes, that's good Bitcoin, no, that's not good Bitcoin, right? Oh, that's copied Bitcoin, no, it's invalid, right? There's no central coordinator doing that, because, you know, of course we have, like, in a sense, we have, you know, kind of pseudo digital scarcity when we're talking about, like, you know, like, let's say, like, digital dollars, right? Before cryptocurrency ever was invented, I mean, there was digital ledgers of dollars that banks kept records of. And, you know, of course they could inflate it, but, like, they wouldn't let just the average Joe copy and paste his dollar balance in his bank account, right? So, like, there was already, in a sense, digital scarcity in that way, where there was a central coordinator making sure that it stayed, you know, at whatever levels they wanted, right? But the key innovation was discovering how to do this without a central coordinator, right?
Right.
And that was the thing that, you know, I guess, I mean, you know, really, I guess, took the world by storm, right? I mean, like, and it took a while for people to really realize, and of course, there's a lot of people left to realize it, but yeah, I mean, it's taking a really long time for people to realize just how important and also just how, you know, like, crazy of a discovery this is. Like you said, you know, digital scarcity, it just doesn't make sense in the minds of most people. It didn't make sense in my mind either, you know, when you first hear about it. And I think that's part of the, you know, that's part of the friction also with Bitcoin's adoption, is that so many people don't believe it, right? They think that, no, of course you can just, you know, hack it or make more of it. You know, who's in charge of it? If there's no one's in charge, then how can you be sure that you can't make more of it, right? They just, you know, it's like these hurdles that are really, really difficult to get over unless you just trust, you know, the people telling you what they're telling you, right? Like the kind of the shamans of Bitcoin, whoever they may be, or unless you're technical enough to actually, like, look at the protocol and understand how these decentralized systems work and how they're able to enforce these rules.
I think animations like yours, particularly there was one recently, it was Bitcoin as a store of value, and it's just heading along on the X, Y axis in a straight line at 100%. And then underneath it, you've got all these failing fiat currencies. And it's a really good representation, I think, for anyone that spends at least 5 minutes looking at that and going, oh, hang on a minute. Wait, gold's there, dollars are there, you know, yen's there, whatever. And it's all falling down, you know, to the right. That's got to be fairly convincing to someone who doesn't really have any kind of understanding of Bitcoin. It reminds me, actually, you've been known to quote or at least reference seashells quite a lot on your Twitter handle. And I fucking love that, because it actually was, I think I saw the first one a few years ago, where you're like, selling Bitcoin is like, you know, discovering gold and then selling it for more seashells. And it's like the dumbest thing ever. And I just enjoy that framing quite a lot. And so I tend to tell that to people whenever they ask. But this video that we're talking about, that I'm talking about, it's like a nice visual representation of just seashells collapsing under the weight of this
sound money,
indomitable, right? Brand sound new money thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, and actually, yeah, so we're hitting on another key kind of inflection point in my discovery of Bitcoin that I guess I forgot to mention earlier, but I think, you know, I became fully, I'd say, convinced of Bitcoin, or at least committed to Bitcoin, when I started using it as my unit of account for measuring my net worth. This is something I also, you know, try to talk about quite a bit, because I think a lot of people still either they haven't really thought about doing it, or, you know, just technically it's kind of cumbersome to do it, right? There's no good software out there for, like, just tracking your net worth in terms of Bitcoin. I mean, this is something I think would be a really cool thing to build at some point.
Definitely.
I'm not a web developer, so I'm, you know, this is a set of skills I need to learn and put together. But yeah, I've kind of, you know, shortly after getting fully orange pilled, you know, in late 2020, and going further and further down the rabbit hole, one of the things I did was I started to measure my net worth in terms of Bitcoin. And when I first started doing this, I still had other assets, right? I still had dollars and I still had stocks. And I still had shit coins. As a matter of fact, I had shit coins, you know, I think all the way through 2021. I didn't dump them until, you know, around them, those times. I haven't touched them since, but yeah, but like, so I had these other things. And as soon as I started measuring my net worth in terms of Bitcoin, what I realized was that all of these other things, and this is, you know, getting back to the animation we just spoke about, right? All of these other things are falling in terms of value, in terms of Bitcoin, right? Falling in value in terms of Bitcoin. Mm. So the longer you hold on to these other assets, whether it be dollars, shitcoins, real estate, stocks, it really doesn't matter, right? There's nothing as scarce as absolute digital scarcity. There's literally nothing as scarce as that, right? So it will always, long-term, fall in value relative to Bitcoin. And I started seeing this happen, right? Like, I mean, you know, of course, like it was the perfect timing too, because I started measuring my net worth kind of right at the start of that second, you know, run up when we hit that, you know, the second all-time high or whatever in 2021. But regardless, you know, I started seeing like, oh shit, you know, even though I'm holding mostly Bitcoin, my net worth is going down.
Yeah.
Right. Like it was a mind fuck. I was like, man, like I'm watching the price of Bitcoin go up and I'm watching my net worth in terms of dollars go up. You know, that's whatever. That's great. But watching my net worth in terms of Bitcoin start to go down as, you know, Bitcoin's running up again. Yeah, it's totally,
brutal.
totally changed my reference point. And very shortly after that, you know, after starting to do that, I just sold everything that I, you know, any other assets I had, I sold them all. And I've pretty much been 100% into Bitcoin ever since. I try to stay as close to zero fiat as possible.
Sitting on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, no, honestly, yeah, I've sold, I haven't sold any chairs. I'll be honest. I haven't sold any chairs. I actually bought a nice ergonomic chair recently. So I've actually bought
a chair. You're acquiring chairs.
Don't tell anybody. But no, I mean, you know, I think you got to invest in yourself. And like, my back was starting to hurt. All right. I was like sitting too long, making these damn animations. I had to like start sitting up straight. But no, I mean, honestly, like I was just like, I can't be holding these other things because the risk of losing wealth in terms of Bitcoin just was too, you know, it was too hard to swallow. It was too hard of a pill to swallow. So I was like, you know what? I need to secure the sats, you know, that I have in terms of my net worth. I need to secure at least this level. And then of course, try to save more, right? I mean,
right.
That's what we're trying to do. Yeah, I couldn't bear watching my net worth in terms of Bitcoin go down anymore.
The panic that you feel when you watch the price run up is something so strange because you kind of, all right, I've got to as like level X, whatever that you think that you're comfortable with, but you also know that you don't have enough. And then when you hear others in the space that have been in it for a lot longer than you have, talk about how they don't have enough and they're starting to panic and you're like, what the fuck? And I've sort of always, you know, tried to, like, I don't think I'm a very greedy person. It's like, how much is enough, you know, but that lizard brain, you know, the brainstem just takes over when you watch the price run up in fiat terms and you know that those stats are getting further and further out of reach the higher that goes up.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, it's like you've got U.S. real estate in that animation, and there's a cool freeze frame just underneath it that I think I'm going to copy paste and share around. But the U.S. real estate, like real estate in Australia is just like a religion. It's this just weird cult, and everyone just froths on it, and they tell you how you got to buy and blah, 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 blah. And like, I mean, in Sydney, the average home price for some shitty two bedroom is like over $1 million. And you're like, oh, cool. So everyone's a millionaire now. Like, how do you not see this as a problem? You know, I'm looking for the forward to the day when a million is like a big number again.
Right. Yeah. A million sats.
How has discovering Bitcoin changed you?
Well, I mean, I'd say it's made me much more focused in terms of my productivity, for sure. I mean, I think, so before Bitcoin, you know, I really struggled with being productive at work and then being able to come home and like basically have to figure out what to do with the money that you earn, right? And so like I was just in this constant struggle between like, you know, focusing enough on work to like, you know, be more productive and you know, get promotions and whatnot, and then at the same time coming home, not to mention having time for my friends and family, but like but just coming home and like figuring out like, what am I going to do with my finances, right? Because I think it's something that's like a lot of people don't really think about it, right? I mean, Bitcoiners do, obviously, but people who aren't Bitcoiners, it just seems like it's like that's just part of life, right? Like you have to like learn how to manage your money or how to invest it, right? And it becomes a second job, and it's really tough, especially when, you know, like you're managing the money of your household, right? That puts extra stress on it. And then, and you feel like you have to like ape into stocks or whatever.
Yeah.
So anyways, I don't know, like I was all over the place before finding Bitcoin and just being able to be a simple saver, right? I am totally aligned with being a simple saver. I've always actually been a saver, right? And you know, growing up, I just saved in the wrong money. I saved in fiat, right? I've always been a saver though, right? Like I've always been saving up for something, and then, you know, by the time I save up for it, I almost never pull the trigger. It's like I'm just like, okay, well, maybe I'll save up for something better then. And so I've always had this like saving mindset even as a child. But then as an adult, I lost it because I realized that you can't save fiat. And so, you know, it kind of pushed me away from, you know, my natural state of just being a saver. And so discovering Bitcoin allowed me to rediscover what it was that I always was, which was just a simple saver, right? I want to work hard. I want to be productive. I want to, you know, do good work, help my company, you know, all those things. And then I want to come home and I want to be able to just relax, spend time with my wife, go out and dance. I don't want to have to think about other things. I just want to save the money I earn, and that's it.
I don't know. So I think that sounds pretty aspirational, to be honest. You know, in this fiat world, but that's, I mean, you know, like, come on.
Right. I mean, it sounds nice, right? Like you could just go to work and then save your money and then do what you want, like in your free time. Doesn't that sound nice? Yeah. So anyways, like,
apparently,
I know. No, it was like, so it focused me, you know, in my career, but then also freed up so much, you know, energy, that I could then refocus on the other things that, you know, are super important in life. So I don't know, man. Like I think Bitcoin has really like really changed me in those ways. It's made me, I don't know, man, like, you know, not a fucking crazy fiat person who's just on the hamster wheel. That's what I felt like before.
Yeah. And it's so strange because you do get that sense that you are a hamster on a fiat wheel, but you're unable to pinpoint precisely why. I mean, there's so many memes prior to Bitcoin, you know, about, you know, growing up, getting a job, steady job, buying a house, white picket fence, boxes made of ticky tacky, you know, that whole thing. But personally, I think that's a psyop. I think that actually sounds fantastic. The other thing is that, like, you're sort of told that being the hamster on the wheel is, like, I mean, it is a bad thing. I guess it's more like you're unable to pursue some of your other interests. Like, you might be really passionate and dedicated to your job. So you show up every day and you're productive and you're doing your best and you're creating value and being of service and all that sort of stuff. But then, you know, you've got other things. You might want to play the guitar or, I don't know, learn how to play fucking pool or something. Who knows? Whatever it is, you know, like, or do animations for like Price Action and cool stuff like Kager and stuff, you know. But like... Why we just can't afford the time, because as you said, like, you finish work and it's like, all right, now you need to learn to be a part-time like investor or stock trader or something, or find a financial advisor that can help you do that. And it's like, that's just nauseating. All of that shit is nauseating. Why can't you just go to work, put in a day's effort, bank some of that stuff, and then get on with your life. Go and dance with your wife.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Or, do that. But then also, you know, refine those skills, right? And
100%.
And become, you know, become an even better, you know, data visualization person or data engineer. You know, I think, so it's interesting because, my background, just career-wise, I'm a data scientist. So I work a lot with like building data pipelines and building data visualizations and this kind of stuff. As you know, and so what you've seen me produce in Bitcoin Twitter land is actually very, very much similar to like what I kind of do for my career as well.
Cool.
But I will say, like, I was not nearly as good as, you know, I've gotten over the past couple of years. And that's directly because of Bitcoin, right? I mean, I think Bitcoin has, not only has it given me the time to like refine those skills, but it's encouraged me, right? Like the plebs on Bitcoin Twitter, right? Like, like really just like encouraging, you know, the Bitcoin companies that have been, you know, so kind to sponsor me to like, you know, encourage me financially as well. Like, it's just, I think Bitcoin in general has kind of elevated that, you know, that skill that that I was missing. So I don't know, man. I attribute like so much of, I think, especially my kind of more recent success to Bitcoin. I think if it wasn't for Bitcoin, I'd be lost. I'd be lost, and I wouldn't be as skillful. That's for sure.
That's awesome. That's so cool to hear, because I mean, yeah, this is just why I sort of struggle with getting people across the bridge when you're like, hear all these stories. That's half the impetus of actually why I started the podcast, because it was like, I know that it's changed all these people in so many net positive ways. In fact, I'm yet to hear a net negative. The closest I got was like,
someone comes on the show and is like, Bitcoin has made my life miserable.
I know. Like, the closest I got was like a jarring response from Vlad Kostia about, you know, being more cynical of the world. But he wasn't coming at it like it was like a, I guess he was just saying that it made him slightly less idealistic. And you have to realize his context. He's coming from like a country that grew up under communism and all these other sorts of things that it's just shit that I can't relate to being in a relatively wealthy and, shall we say, not full on hardcore socialist yet. But the thing is like this Bitcoin thing, you pass through this orange portal or whatever, and you feel better. You know, it's like coming out of a float or something. You just feel better and you feel more driven, purposeful, hopeful to be able to, yeah, okay, those things that I'd like to do with my time, my spare time, and maybe what I'd like to do with my life. That's now a possibility, you know, than a possibility than it was before.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it definitely gives hope, right? I mean, it seems obvious, right? Like if you start using a money, where everything is getting cheaper for you, you know, your dream house is coming down and meeting you somewhere in the middle as you're saving up to it, or you know, your college tuition you need to pay for your children is coming into reach, right? It's not like not flying away from you. I mean, the change in reference that Bitcoin allows is one that I think kind of just naturally will bring hope to whoever adopts it as their money, as their unit of account. It's hard not to be hopeful when you just keep seeing everything around you getting cheaper and cheaper. I mean, it sounds so stupid and simple, but I don't know, man, I'm a pretty simple dude, man. Like I'm not that smart. I'm just like a simple saver and I want, you know, a few nice things in life. And before Bitcoin, it seemed like I would never get those things because, you know, it's just impossible. They're just getting too expensive and they're flying away. And, you know, there's no way I could ever, you know, have a job that pays enough that, you know, could get me a decent family home, you know? And now it's like, okay, well, this is something I can work towards. I can build my skills. I can, you know, get better at this or that. And I can save my money, and the price of that, you know, nice family home is going to come and meet me somewhere in the middle. Right. So it's like, it makes life, just more palatable. It's like, okay, yeah, I can do this. Right. It's like, instead of it being like, there's no fucking way, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, this is doable. Like, I think I can do this now.
The power of savings, man. It's insane.
For real. Yeah. You know, I mean, Kane's
fucked a lot of people up. What a soy individual.
For real. Yeah. That's super fucked up. I know. but yeah, I don't know, man. I think Bitcoin can really change kind of the framing of the entire world. I hope that everyone can see just how powerful it is to be using money like Bitcoin. One of the things, I don't know, take this in a direction, you know, if you don't want to go there, but I was just going to say, one of the things I've been kind of obsessed about recently is how Bitcoin will scale.
Right.
Have you thought about this at all?
I've given it cursory thought only with conversations with people like Pete Wynn from Fedi. Diving into a little bit of the cashew stuff. There's, you know, some of the conversation in around Twitter around Lightning and some of its restrictions that are starting to emerge. But it's not something that I have thought too deeply on.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I, it's a very complicated subject for sure. And obviously none of us know really the right answer, right? No one's quite figured it out yet. So I think it's really up in the air as to how it's going to do that, or if it will, for that matter, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is something that like I've started thinking about more recently. And, you know, because we are so lucky that, you know, we're early enough that we, you know, we're able to actually save it trustlessly, self-custody it, be in full control of our sats, right? Our UTXOs on chain.
No, nah, man, you need a
have you been doing your UTXO management? Okay, but anyways, what I was gonna say, so we're lucky to be here this early, but you know, something that I have been thinking about a lot is like, what happens when, you know, the next the wave of the next 100 million people, or billion for that matter, start piling in and things get crazy, and you know, this like this message of hope that we've been talking about, right? Like this entire message behind Bitcoin that we've been talking about starts to be out of reach of a lot of people, right? This is something I'm a little afraid of, right? Like, because you know, yeah, like I hear it all the time, right? Like Bitcoin is hope and it's financial freedom for everyone in the world, but the truth is, like, we haven't quite figured it out yet, and we don't know if it will be. It's going to be financial freedom for definitely, you know, the first 50 million, that's for sure. But like, more than that, we have to figure some shit out first. We've got to figure out scaling solutions.
I think on the face of it, it is. And it, I guess you go to that message, say to try and orange pill someone, you're like, you know, Bitcoin's hope, man. Like, and it can be a net positive for you if you just get a little bit. That's fundamentally true. But yeah, as you say, and I think we mentioned this, had a brief discussion with Eric Kayson about this, is I do get concerned with like the price getting out of reach and just that massive cognitive dissonance, because it does take quite a lot of humility and curiosity to sort of go across the bridge and sort of want to understand and want to learn. And there's plenty of examples in history that demonstrate to me that the vast majority of individuals are not interested in doing that. And so, you know, I guess it's our job to make that easier, and that's why people are working on certain solutions. But I do get concerned with like a growing resentment more than anything.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and then you watch like the mainstream media just pile on into a group. You know, it's easy to just slice off a group and say these people are assholes because of X, Y, and Z, and they're the ones that wreck your life. And you know, you can plead your case all you want, but effectively you're outnumbered.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this all evolves with, you know, the legacy system kind of failing, right? And possibly at an accelerating rate. And so more and more people kind of struggling, right? And then you'll have this dichotomy where like at the same time, Bitcoiners are going to be thriving. And so it's going to be like this really interesting period where I think we could become kind of the patsies for the collapse of fiat, right? They might blame us. But at the same time, I hope that instead of blaming us, they just realize that we were right. So it's like, you know, join us. You know, it's like, come on, guys. Really, like, just stop. You know, you don't have to, like, you don't have to be in those chains anymore, right? You can teleport really, over.
I really wish that were true, man. But I can think of a really recent example, and there's been zero humble pie eaten by a number of individuals that I can count on all 10 fingers and toes that have just double down in their cognitive dissonance. I guess at the end of the day, it's like, it's kind of like that. You just don't be the asshole that goes, see, I told you so. You just stay humble.
Yeah.
And you say, it's cool. It's all good. Like, when you've got some questions, come and talk to me. But, you know, just be that person that's, not a dick.
You got to try your best. I mean, it's hard not to be a dick when, you know, it's like when you've got people blatantly scamming or just you know, arguing in bad faith. You know, I have the tendency to to kind of, you know, become a dick a little bit. So, you know, sorry if anyone's ever seen that side of me.
Oh, dude,
I try to contain it. My wife yells at me sometimes.
That's almost like my default mode, and you know, like I have to work really hard to sort of quell that side, because I was looking at something the other day in the industry that I work in, and they were talking about this particular company that started up and they're going through a tough time and blah, blah, blah. And so I looked a little bit deeper into it, and I realized that it was a Web3 crypto scam. And I was like, what do you expect, bro? And it took all my power to not tweet out some sarky thing or write some sarky sort of, you know, response or something. I just had to, all right, let it slide. They'll learn here when you need it. It's all good. You know.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, I do try to, like, I think living through, so being fully orange-pilled through, you know, a proper cycle, right? I mean, I've traded through cycles, but it's totally different when you've actually become orange-pilled and you're just kind of quietly stacking day in, day out, and you know, learning more and more about Bitcoin and really, you know, diving down that rabbit hole. But like going through a whole cycle, I think it gives you kind of this, like, this different frame of reference. You get a little bit more zen, you know, and like, I've tried to become more like, you know, plant the seeds, let them come to you when they're ready type of attitude. I don't know. And of course, like, just trying to, you know, educate anyone who's willing to learn.
It's about just being the Uncle Jim when they're ready. And it's difficult, because if you are so deep and far down the rabbit hole, you know, it's kind of hard. You got to kind of look up every once in a while and remember what it was like to be at the top, and and getting the courage to dive in and be like, okay, let's check this thing out. You know, think I'm ready. Because you do go down this thing, and that Satoshi quote always just lingers in the back of my mind. You know, if you don't understand it, I don't have time to explain it to you. It's like he tried his best prior to that, and then it was just like, do you know what? You got to do it yourself, okay? I can only hold your hand for so long.
Totally. You know. Did you ever read the Book of Satoshi? Did you read that one?
I haven't read it. It's in my cart, my Amazon, but I haven't pulled the trigger yet.
Nice. Yeah, that one's interesting, you know, because it's like, I want to say it came out in like 2014 or 2015. So it was before, you know, the block size war and the fork. And so it has, you know, like, it has some characters that we've heard of, right, from that war that unfortunately kind of sided with the big blockers or were big blockers, right? But like, you kind of see this interesting frame of reference from the early days. Like, you know, reading all of these early quotes from Satoshi, because that's really what it is, right? It's basically just a book full of quotes from Satoshi and then, you know, some brief kind of explanations of the things that he's talking about, or literally, like, in his own words. Sometimes he'll just like the author would just put in like the actual answers to questions from Satoshi himself, right? That he would write in these forums. But yeah, that's like, it is just so interesting. Like this idea of an anonymous creator who, I mean, he was there, like he was there, like even when I first, you know, interfaced with Bitcoin, right? And those, like with Silk Road, right? It's weird to think that, like, I'm trying to think if the dates align there. Like, he might have still been, he might have just disappeared, if I'm actually being honest. But like the fact that it was that close, right? And he, and like, he was there. He was like answering questions, he's taking his time, explaining things, you know, working through problems, fixing bugs. Just crazy to think about that, like the history of Bitcoin.
Totally.
I nerd out about that for sure.
it is just, yeah, I mean, it's cool. It takes on a little bit of a, I mean, if you take it too far, it takes on a little bit of a religious sort of zeal, but it's just this notion that there were individuals just on one of those forums, just, yeah, literally just hashing the stuff out, talking about it. And this figure whom we all just owe a debt of gratitude to. It's another one of those aspects of Bitcoin that just can melt your mind. And that can be a real pleasurable experience, but it can also be a little difficult at times too, because it's just like there's so many things within this protocol that just break your brain and you're just like amazed and awed at this thing. You're like, whoa, I cannot believe it.
Yeah.
What have you learned about the world and yourself since discovering Bitcoin?
That is an interesting question. What have I learned about the world? Well, I mean, the world's a big place. It's got a lot of problems, and I think a lot of those problems are rooted in money. I mean, I think that that's been really the, you know, like the thing that I've learned through Bitcoin is just how kind of fucked the financial system is worldwide. I mean, not just with the dollar, but with all fiat. I think that it's just kind of at the breaking point. And it's something that was totally not on my radar before Bitcoin. And then now it's just like hyper aware of it because of Bitcoin. And, you know, like the type of things where it's, you know, you read the headlines and it's like, there's countries, you know, that you would have never thought would be dealing with hyperinflation, and they're dealing with hyperinflation, and you see all sorts of just, you know, suffering because of it. So, I mean, I don't know, like I learned, I think just looking at the world, I learned how much Bitcoin can help fix all of these problems, if adopted by everyone. You know, it's like, it just seems like it would be so easy. But again, you know, I think that getting from the zero to one moment is the hard part. And it's also the type of thing where it's like, you know, when you're early on, you don't know if you're right. And if there's not a lot of people that have already jumped in, then it's kind of scary to be part of that first cohort. But I do think we're kind of on that, we're on the brink of that like suddenly inflection point. And so I really hope that the world, like I really hope that I live to see like a fully hyper Bitcoinized world. I know, you know, Samson Mao, who's working with, you know, El Salvador and other countries and trying to not only like seed these kind of smaller circular economies, but also, you know, orange pill like entire nation states, right? Yeah. I mean, he seems to think that we're going to reach hyper Bitcoinization by 2030, which I think is insane. But at the same time, like, when you're talking about a monetary protocol that kind of not only like it's a one-way door, right? So it, not only the people who adopt it, they never go back, but it kind of like sucks out the power of the legacy system. So while it's growing, the other one's growing weaker, and it seems accelerated. So I almost can't imagine a scenario where it doesn't just melt up, in the sense that, you know, kind of similar to like the charts we've seen with like the German mark and gold, where it's just doesn't make any sense, right? Like things are just breaking at the seams. And, you know, anyone who's got Bitcoin, like, I mean, it's going to be weird when prices of things in terms of dollars are less stable than prices of things in terms of Bitcoin. But I don't know. I mean, I could see that happening like relatively soon if enough people kind of wake up at the same moment.
I'm not even sure if
humans have herd mentality. So like, yeah. I don't see that, you know, like, I think that's, it's definitely a non-negligible possibility that happens fairly soon.
Yeah, it's like,
but yeah, I don't know. I didn't really answer the question there.
No, it's all right. I'll re-ask it in a minute. I was just going to say, history has a tendency to move on a dime. You know, you can make some pretty dramatic paradigm shifts in almost an instant. I mean, it's like a day, an event happens, something triggers something, and then, you know, it's like what's that term in biology? Punctuated equilibrium, where it just kind of the evolution happens, and you may not see it immediately. I mean, you could argue we've already experienced punctuated equilibrium, you know, in 2009, and the ripple effects are still going out. But I feel like that sort of notion of a crack up boom applies here as well, where we could get just this enormous forcing function where everybody, okay, like if you don't somehow get your hands on some Bitcoin, on some sats, like you're literally not going to make it. You know, you are compelled. Any rational individual, even if they're following the herd, would look at the situation and get that sticker shock that, you know, eggs are $25 for a dozen or something, and then be like, shit, you know, that buddy of mine who's got Bitcoin, what's he paying for eggs, kind of thing. That's my hope, is, you know, people do just kind of, people will be people. I just hope that there's not a lot of, I hope the value prop is so obvious that it obfuscates any requirement for violence.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, no doubt, right? Hopefully it's not a chaotic and violent transition. And I mean, it might not have to be. Like, I think you get to a certain point and I don't know. Like, there's got to be different levels of equilibrium that happen, you know, just in terms of price, right? Like, I don't know. Like, but at the same time, it could just melt up. I don't know. You know, like, yeah. it could go either way. Like, either like we kind of like we reach these levels where it's like, okay, you know, cent sat parity, $1 million of Bitcoin, and it just kind of hovers there for like a really long time, and it gives enough time for, you know, plebs who are now figuring it out at that point to start to, you know, exchange some of their pennies for sats, right? Because that's, yeah, it'll literally be the sat cent parity. And I hope it stays there long enough to like allow them to graft some of that wealth over, and then it'll go up another level, and, you know, the next cohort. And I mean, eventually though, yeah, eventually there's just no one left willing to accept your seashells.
Well, that's, you know, the thing that we've kind of forgotten about here is, like, at that point, even if you can't, say, go to an exchange and buy some, you can earn them.
Yeah,
you can always earn them, right? You know, you might have an employer that's like, all right, you know what, we're going to roll this Bitcoin thing out. So if anyone wants 50% of their pay in Bitcoin and the other 50% in this shitty fiat money. Cool. Let us know. We'll do the split for you. And then next minute, you know, you just by virtue of providing value and service to whatever it is that you're working on, you start to accumulate your own little cache of sats, and you maybe don't need to sort of rush to an exchange or, you know, become resentful, because it's like, I don't know, maybe there's something there.
That's true. I mean, I guess, so when you think about it, you know, there's tons and tons of people who are in debt in terms of fiat. And so for them, the transition might actually be one that frees them in a sense, not only because they've now adopted a better money, but they're no longer in debt because their fiat debts have inflated away.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like they get a fresh start. And as long as they're able to find work, you know, and able to earn Bitcoin at that point, then yeah, I mean, you know, obviously they'd be better off in both ways. And yeah, you have to realize, like, I mean, we're talking about, you know, I mean, the moment in time when, you know, nobody's willing to accept dollars for exchange for Bitcoin, right? Like whenever that happens in the future, and it will happen at some point, it has to, right? There's literally going to be the last trade, right? There's going to be a final exchange of dollars and Bitcoin, and that's going to be the very last one. And, you know, someone's going to get the short end of the stick on that trade. But after that, there's going to be no one left with Bitcoin willing to accept dollars. But the point is, you know, at that point, you know, like, I think there will have been so many entrepreneurs and well-intentioned early adopters who will have come into quite a bit of wealth. And I think that they will, you know, really want to create and innovate, right, in this new world. And as a result, you know, obviously hire a lot of people and they'll have a lot of Bitcoin. So, like, you know, it's pretty obvious that they'll just pay, you know, their workers or their employees with Bitcoin. So there definitely will be Bitcoin to be earned at that point. And framing it in the way where it's like, you know, everyone who's indebted in fiat will be freed. I mean, I think that's actually a pretty hopeful idea as well, if you think about it. So maybe it won't be so bad. I don't know.
I got to go back and ask it though. What have you learned about yourself since discovering Bitcoin?
What have I learned about myself? I've learned, well,
you're good at animations.
I mean, I think that, I don't know. Like, I guess I have learned that I have kind of this obsession with data that I think was, you know, kind of stewing, you know, ever since I kind of first started dealing with data, doing research in college and working a little afterwards and whatever. I mean, it wasn't, but, you know, I think my passion for data analysis and visualization didn't really fully start until I started diving into the world of Bitcoin data. I mean, it's such a rich field of data. I mean, it's endless, right? There's just so many different ways you can slice and dice this data. And I mean, not only, you know, like, thinking of ways to animate it or visualize it or tell a story with it, but like just getting it in the first place, right? Like one thing I've been trying to do recently is, well, first of all, do you know what a UTXO is? Have you learned about UTXOs yet?
I am not Peter McCormick.
All right. Well, I'll just tell you real quick, and any of the listeners here, there's a very important thing to understand. So if you want to be a Bitcoiner, you might need to know just what a UTXO is. I mean, it's
kind of important.
The fundamental. it's a little important. It's the fundamental chunk of Bitcoin. So like in the same way that gold comes in these chunks, right? You can have a little flake of gold, you can have a bar of it, you can have a coin, right? You can have different chunks, different sized chunks of gold, right? A UTXO is just a chunk of Bitcoin. So the way that Bitcoin works under the hood is it comes in these chunks, right? You don't have like a single balance, right? There's not a ledger that tells, you know, Wicked owns this much Bitcoin. It's literally Wicked owns these chunks of Bitcoin. Wicked owns these UTXOs, right? So yeah, UTXO is a chunk. And what I've become obsessed with is getting a list of all the chunks of Bitcoin currently that are out there, right? All these chunks that are currently there, but also a historical record of all the chunks that have been, you know. So like whenever you spend Bitcoin, you're literally taking your chunks and you're putting them together and you're sending them to other people. And when they get to the other people, they become new chunks, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you'll like consolidate them together. You can think of it like melting down pieces of gold into a bigger chunk, right? Similar to that, you can combine your UTXOs and make a bigger one, or you can split them and make them into a bunch of smaller ones. But yeah, I really want to map this out in some interesting ways. I've got some ideas for how I want to visualize this, but the data set is enormous. Like it's I think there's like I want to say there's like 100 million chunks right now or thereabouts of Bitcoin. So 100 million UTXOs. And that's just the ones that there currently are. I think you know, historically there's I guess I'll have a count hopefully at some point in the future, but historically there's had to have been, I don't know, probably billions, right? If you think about it. So yeah, I mean, building up this data set of UTXOs, both current and historical, is something that's kind of been a bit of a passion project of mine, and I'm trying to do it in a few different ways. You know, God mode would be like if I could just build it up from my own full node, but that's like a little too advanced. I'm not that smart. So what I'm doing instead is I'm like I'm using someone else's node and, you know, querying their information through an API, and it's a little bit easier for me to do that just in terms of programmatically. But anyways, yeah, this has kind of been my passion recently, is like trying to get a historical record of all the chunks of Bitcoin and where they've gone and how they've been spent and, you know, where they are now.
Well, that's something we need, man, because for, you know, liberal arts brains like me who prefer to learn a little bit more visually when it comes to data and stuff like that, I really enjoy how you lay out the information such that, you know, a dummy like me can just be like, huh, that's cool. You know, like the weighted average cost of Bitcoin where you DCA.
Yeah.
You mentioned.
Yeah. I love that one.
That's like,
I love that one, man. Yeah. That's, I think that, okay. Here's my new theory on that one. All right. I think the bull run starts when all the daily DCAers are in profit.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that's the key, because if you think about it, you know, you've just gone through this like brutal, you know, agonizing bear market, and, you know, just the FUD and the laughing, you know, and all these naysayers are saying, oh, you're down 80%. You guys are idiots, right? And then you've got your base of, you know, full on adopters, right? This is our money. We don't give a shit if it's down 80%. We're stacking every day. We're working hard. Like, we just want more sats, right? We're stacking every day. Setting the floor. And, you know, like, we stack through the lows, we stack through the highs, and it gets to the point where, you know, you've gone through all those lows, and now all of a sudden your cost basis is lower than the price. And what do you know? Like, we're still 55% down from the all-time high, but you're in profit? Are you kidding me? Right? Like, And now all of a sudden, all the Bitcoin adopters are like, holy shit, we're, you know, even though we're 55% off the all-time high, we're fucking rich again. You know what I'm saying? Like, and you start getting this buzz. Like, you know, you feel the buzz that's starting to build in Bitcoin land. Like, Bitcoin Twitter is starting to get that buzz again, right?
Yeah.
It's because we're all in profit.
Open water Bitcoin.
You know? And so I think that's where it starts. Like, it starts with the base and, you know, the true adopters. And once they all become in profit again, because they've been consistently stacking, then everyone starts realizing, like, holy shit, you know, what the fuck? How are these guys in profit? They, you know, they're still down 55% from the all-time high. How could that be? Could they have been right this whole time? And, you know, then that, I think that gets the ball rolling again.
Fiat bros in disbelief.
Yeah, for real. And then it crescendos, and then it falls again,
and then it falls again. Off we go. Yeah. Unless it's like a super cycle, which is what everyone was banging on about last time. It was like, I don't know about that. I've seen a few little, a little bit out on Twitter recently where people are starting to nudge that narrative again, and it's like, look, if it is, great. If it isn't, great. Who gives a shit? Like, I don't know. Stay humble, stack sats, as Odell says.
I don't think you can escape human psychology. There's always going to be people who, you know, take too much risk, who use too much leverage. And, you know, the psychology of it is always going to crescendo in a FOMO peak. And, you know, even though, like, you know, obviously we didn't get like a full on blow off top this previous cycle, I mean, we still went up really quickly, right? I mean arguably we actually went up quicker than we've gone up in the past. It's just that we kind of flatlined, you know, instead of going through a few different, you know, crescendos to a blow off top, we just kind of flatlined this past time. But regardless, I think it's impossible to like get around human psychology when we're talking about these market dynamics. And it's actually another one of these like genius design choices by Satoshi, right? It's just enough time between these 4-year cycles that, you know, like the people who aren't convinced, they kind of forget about it. And the people who are, like, you know, they like, it's enough time for them to just build a new base. And then it just happens over and over. And it's almost like, you know, you have to go through these cycles until the whole world wakes up. But of course, you know, you couldn't wake them all up at once, right? Like,
no.
If this was a protocol that had, you know, no halving, and it just had a you know, smooth issuance, and it was a, you know, an easy, you know, curve of inflation, and in that way it would almost be too similar to fiat. And I wonder if governments would have felt that it was more of a threat, right? Or people would have maybe not adopted it as much because it wouldn't have been as exciting, right? During these like kind of crazy FOMO peaks.
It's just enough
time. So I don't know, like this. Yeah. Just enough time, just enough, you know, psychological warfare happening all the speculators and the actual adopters, and yeah, it's crazy, man. And here we are again, and it seems like, you know, here, you know, it's like, oh, here we go again. You know, it kind of feels like we're about to lift off again. And I don't know about you, but last time, man, I got pretty manic, like during the bull run. So I'm gonna have to try to stay calm this time and like level headed. It's gonna be crazy, I think.
That's when the stay humble part of that equation really comes into its own. It's difficult.
Oh, man.
It's hard to concentrate. Yeah. It's you know, it's exciting.
You start thinking about quitting your job. You're like, oh, I don't need to work anymore.
There's that awesome meme of like Kermit, when Bitcoin's up 20% in the week, and he's like saying to his boss, "You shut your mouth."
Like, yeah, I saw that one.
just take it easy.
Who do you think you're talking to?
I don't need this job anymore. Yeah. Beyond the animations, How do you explain Bitcoin?
I think the way I like to explain it is it's just money. I mean, it's just the best money we have. Right? It's the best money we've ever discovered. That's how at least that's how it kind of resonates with me. Like I see it just as really good money. I just think the world is kind of, it's in dire need of a better money. And so I hope that message of like, oh, your money's broken. Well, you know, look at this. It's better money. It's money that's not going to rug you. It's money that can't be confiscated. It's money that can't be controlled, right? Like, here it is, and it's open for all, right? Anyone can use it, and you can take it anywhere you want with you, and you can send it to anyone that you want. So I think that message of you know, just simplifying it to what it is. I mean, I guess to me at least, is just money. I know some people think that it's more than that, and I can see that, you know, that side of the coin as well, right? But to me, it's just, yeah, it's just the best money that we've ever discovered. So, and I think the best money that we ever will. I don't think that we'll ever be able to discover better money. And part of the reason why is because it's programmable, so we can make it better if we want. Right? There's different things we can do to it to give it, you know, slightly better qualities in different ways. So, it's just really interesting kind of paradigm shift where it's like, this could be it, right? This could be the end all for money as we know it. Like, we don't need to really discover anything better now that we've discovered Bitcoin.
Right on.
Yeah, man. Sometimes I wonder if aliens out in the universe have also discovered absolute scarcity.
Maybe.
You think so?
Maybe they discovered something with 12 million limited supply cap.
Maybe. Who knows? And that's the funny thing, right? It's like the actual number doesn't really matter. It's the discovery of the digital scarcity. That's the thing. But yeah, no, I wonder that sometimes, like, are we the first? Could we be the first? I mean, I almost feel like for civilization to advance past a certain point, you almost need to have sound money, right? And sound digital money for that matter, because unless you're living on a tiny little planet where, you know, physical money can function, any larger planet's going to need a digital form of money. And any money that's not sound is going to be manipulated and always cause more problems and lead to like the kind of the doom of civilization. I don't know, there's a better word for that. I can't think of it, but you know what I'm trying to say? Like, yeah. I think you need sound money for civilization to really prosper.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't think about it. You know, they don't appreciate not even just the sound money thing, but just the enormous time and energy it takes to not only build and develop a civilization, but to maintain it and to progress it forward. You know, you can tear it down pretty quickly. We know of ways. We've seen ways in the past. And so it's important to be aware and, yeah, just be appreciative of the fact that we're ripping on a call peer to peer across the internet like it's nothing, you know. this is damn cool. And then if I wanted to, I could, you know, I could send you coin. Like, it's just nuts, man. The advancements we've made, and there's just a small cohort of individuals that just want to wreck it all, unknowingly, unwittingly, perhaps. I don't know. I'm not going to put motive on them, but whatever, dude.
Yeah.
Wicked, awesome conversation. I appreciate you spending your time. It's guest time, finite energy on discovering Bitcoin, mm-hmm. telling us the tale of how you discovered Bitcoin. It's just cool to watch these Twitter profiles, because this is where all the action really happens, is, you know, like, dive into Nostra every now and again, but I don't know, the network effect is strong on Twitter. But my point is that you see these people, these avatars, these little red apples putting out this this cool stuff, this cool content, where you're just like, oh, makes you think about this thing that you're mildly obsessed with in a completely different way. And to be able to then connect and chat and discuss Bitcoin with you, and particularly uncover your discovery of this thing, it's cool, man. It's a pleasure. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, man. This has been awesome. It's been my pleasure. Oh,